The history of Assyria. The early kings of Assyria, the third dynasty of Ur, and Asshur and Trade, part one. Now, just before 2100 BCE, another empire emerged in the south to rule all of Mesopotamia for 100 years. It's known as the third dynasty of Ur. Now, it was less extensive than the Akkadian Empire, but more tightly organized, with its main centers under transferable governors rather than local vassals. An inscription of one such governor from 2040 BCE establishes that at that date, Asshur was under the control of Ur. Erbil also was intermittently held by the third Ur dynasty, as we know from several economic documents dated in the year of Erbilum. The old form of Erbil was sacked, and from a Sumerian inscription of the time which names Ur's military governor of their term for Erbil. The rich bureaucratic empire governed from Ur, the last manifestation of the Sumerians' political power, which was finally broken up in 206 BCE under the pressure of the Amorites coming in across the Euphrates from the Syrian desert. But that empire had begun to disintegrate some decades before its final collapse, allowing Asshur to recover a measure of independence. We infer this from a tradition that a certain Kikya built the walls of Asshur. Kikya can be approximately dated as he occurs in the Assyrian king list shortly before two kings from whom we have inscriptions, as these inscriptions enable us to date those two kings to soon after 2000 BCE. Kikya's reign cannot have been much before 2000 BCE. But excavations show that the original buildings of the wall of Asshur had been undertaken centuries before this. Yet the tradition was that Kikya was the one who built these walls, and there must have been some basis. Most probably it reflected a rebuilding of the walls by Kikya at a time when he was able to assert himself as an independent ruler. This can only have been when the third dynasty of Ur was already contracting and beginning to crumble. Up to the time of Kikya, Asshur, though strategically important as a stronghold in the Middle Tigris, was not otherwise of major international significance. This position now starts to change. Inscriptions of the kings of Asshur once more become more common and show the extension of Assyrian influence abroad. One of these kings, Elishuma, from just about 2000 BCE, twice refers to establishing the freedom of the people of Akkad, meaning Babylonia, in southern Mesopotamia, and mentions some of the cities of Babylonia as far south as Ur, nearly 400 miles from Asshur. Clearly, this king must have undertaken some kind of intervention there. The exact sense of the expression about establishing freedom is obscure, but one thing which is certain is that it would have been an anachronism to try to tie it to modern ideas of political freedom. The Akkadian word translated freedom often has reference to an ancient city's exemption from taxation, and very likely this is the sense here, indicating that Elishama established the right of those cities to engage in trade with Asshur without being forced by the southern rulers to pay taxes. Elishama's son, Erishim I, used the same word when he said that his city he established the freedom of silver, gold, copper, tin, barley, wool, bran, and chaff. And the term must certainly have been economic in reference, meaning that he exempted all transactions and such commodities from taxation. There is another obscure phrase in one of Elishuma's inscriptions, which may be relevant here. Speaking about the people of Babylonia, he says, "I washed their copper." This may mean that he sold the Babylonians refined copper. This all indicates that these early native Assyrian kings were very much concerned about trade. Understandably, since trade brought not only political influence, but also increasing economic prosperity. This growing economic prosperity is reflected in more ambitious building projects inside the city of Asshur. And we have inscriptions of Erishima I in which he describes how he'd increased the size and splendor of the temple area and extended the wall built by his father. Now, the dearth of political information about early Assyria gives our gleamings about trade added importance. In fact, we know far more about trade from Asshur between 2000 BCE and the time of Shamash-Adad I than we do about its politics. Most of this information comes, however, not from Asshur itself, but from a source hundreds of miles to the north. The greater part of this evidence in question consists of clay tablets found at a site known as Kultepe, the ancient name of Kanish, north of Kayseri in the Asiatic Turkey, in the region often called Cappadocia. These tablets were the archives of several generations of an Assyrian merchant colony living there at the beginning of the second millennium. There were at least a score more settlements of this kind scattered throughout Anatolia, as place names in these texts tell us, but so far only one or two have been identified by tablets found at their sites. We do not know how long the Assyrian merchants had been operating in Anatolia. The earliest date of the Assyrian records from Cappadocia does not necessarily fix the earliest date of the merchant colonies. There may have been colonies in Cappadocia still unexcavated before the one at Kanish. Or even at Kanish itself, there may have been earlier mercantile activity under commercial procedures not requiring documentation on clay tablets. According to a later tradition, Sargon, the first ruler of the Agad or Akkadian Empire, was called into Cappadocia to protect merchants there as early as the 24th century BCE. If this is based on fact, it puts the origin of the merchant colony hundreds of years further back. There is a possibility this tradition was a later invention, reflecting the situation in Cappadocia at the beginning of the second millennium BCE. The site, Kultepe, the buried corpse of the ancient city of Kanish, comprises a large mound where the palaces stood and the residential area at its foot. It is from the residential area that the Assyrian business archives come from. Those so far known amount to about 14,000 tablets, although barely a quarter have actually been published. The basic picture these tablets give is that business houses in Asshur had representatives, often the principals themselves, in Cappadocia organizing trade in Kanish or other cities. At the heart of this trade were ass caravans containing shipments of tin and textiles from Asshur to Cappadocia. Well, who benefited from these Assyrian merchant colonies? Run Group surely was the local rulers, or they would not have permitted these settlements to have continued. Yet the primary motivation for the original settlements must have been the advantage they secured for the Assyrians themselves. From Asshur to Kanish, or in current terms, from Qeslah-Shagat in Iraq to near Kayseri in central Asiatic Turkey, is no easy journey even today, with all the advantages of motor transport. The distance as the crow flies is about 500 miles, but an practicable land route involves over 700 miles at least. Even today, some of the roads may be no more than gravel tracks. The Tarsus, the mighty mountain chain, has to be crossed, and in parts, security is terrible. In 2000 BCE, all these adverse factors applied much greater force. One may accept that once the tradition of trading caravans until this across this area had developed it could continue then by its own inertia, facilitated by a system of posting stages which grew up around it. However, it still needs to be explained why such a system ever began in the first place. Although tin is a very important product, tin is required when you mix it with copper to make bronze. The colonies in Cappadocia were not the only Assyrian merchant colonies known. There is evidence, though on a much more limited scale, of merchants from Asshur operating in the Kirkuk district rather earlier than the period for which we have written evidence from Cappadocia. This, of course, is much nearer to home, but it does illustrate the general concern of Asshur with trade. If Asshur was to be in the mainstream of the civilization coming from the Sumer, trade was vital, just like it was for Sumer itself. Assyria lacked two vital raw materials, timber and metals. Assyrian commercial expansion into Anatolia could originally have been a quest for metals. Assyria needed copper, and Anatolia was able to provide it. But this is not a full solution, as there are Anatolian sources of copper much nearer than Cappadocia. However, the Assyrians did not mine the copper themselves, and it is possible that the native Anatolians who did it centered their mining operation in Cappadocia. A further problem is, where did the Assyrians obtain the tin that they traded for? There is no source of tin in either Assyria or Babylonia. And the absence of solid evidence, we have to guess that it was imported into Assyria from the Zagros area or from Iran. But not only are we in the dark as to the exact source of the tin, we also know nothing about the mechanism by which that metal reached Assyria. Possibly corresponding Assyrian trading colonies existed in Iran or at Zagros to obtain the tin, but on this we just simply don't have any evidence. Even the word Anaku, which translates as tin, offers a problem. Controversy long raged over whether the word meant tin or lead, with opinion now settling on the former. Even so, it is by no means assured that the tin, that the term denoted pure metallic tin. It may well have been some form of tin ore. The most recent suggestion at the time of writing is that the Anaku was a mixed ore containing variable amounts of tin and arsenic. Its use was, of course, to produce bronze from copper or copper ore. And arsenic, as well as tin, can alloy with copper to give a form of bronze. Alongside tin, the other main trading goods of the Assyrians were textiles. But we'll pick up there next time on this trade route. So we're gaining a little bit of knowledge here and there, but it's a lot different in reality than looking at that map that you usually see in Western Civ, showing a little teeny-weeny area on the Tigris-Euphrates River, and that's the whole civilization. They have tentacles of trade everywhere. Now, the sources for this, Ancient Semitic Civilizations by Moscati, Ancient Near East by Gordon, The Man Who Found Nineveh by Silverberg, The Might That Was Assyria by Sags, Mesopotamia, Assyrians, Sumerians, Babylonians, The Dictionary of Civilization, Old Testament Warriors by Eliot, and The Oxford History of the Biblical World by Coogan. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.